Juneau. Can you identify yourself for attendance? And Representative Garrett has just showed up.
Okay, we have Representative Dugan, Representative Wilson, Representative Guttenberg, and Co-Chair Thomas, and Senator Thomas in the audience.
Okay, and we also have in the audience Senator Olson and Senator Diesel here on our side of the state. So we have, let the public know our agenda today. It is, we're going to hear presentations from Sarah Fisher Goode and the staff she brings forward on the energy project, describing AS-42 and the criteria, and then we'll put out some general information on energy policy criteria and general discussion of how energy policy is developed, and we'll follow up with a presentation by Dan Fauci, the Executive Director of Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, the agency which administers, among other things, the energy rebate and the weatherization programs, which are also tied onto this all-in-one energy project list. Representative Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just wondering, can people hear us at the back of the room? Mr. Chairman, if we could take a brief at ease and try to get the mics up.
We're going to take a brief at ease and try to fix some technical issues here.
Okay, we've got nods that are yes, Mr. Chairman.
Back in order, having fixed that technical issue on the sound. So with, we will first call up Sarah Fisher Goode for her presentation, and anybody you wish to bring forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Sarah Fisher Goode. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Energy Authority. I also have with me Peter Krimps. He's the Deputy Director of the Alternative Energy and Energy Efficiency Section of the agency. And depending on how the questions go in the discussion, I also have Brian Carey here, who's available to answer some questions on the Susitna Hydroelectric Project appropriation. I did not prepare a PowerPoint presentation for this, but I did. I have some information that we can provide, especially with respect to a lot of the projects and the programs that the Alaska Energy Authority has requested funds with respect to the governor's submittal of the budget. And my understanding is that what we are talking about is a lot of the programs and of the projects that are of the projects that are of concern of version T in a work draft document of Senate Bill 46. So with that, Mr. Chairman,
before you go any further, I'd like to just, for the record, we do not have the capital budget in our possession, but we are dealing with the what's viewed as the contention section with the energy projects and the non-severability and contingency language that binds all projects together, take all or nothing. So Representative Guerra.
I'm just so we're on the same page, Sarah. Version T, that's the latest version of the Senate Capital Budget that's out. That's the one that has the, I guess for lack of a better summary, a bunch of the projects that have 50% funded by the locality and 50% funded by the state.
Yes, that's my understanding, and the reason I had mentioned that too is there's not only is there a 50% locality issue, there is a requirement for AEA to do some work on some projects that are appropriated in this, if appropriated, basically following the criteria that we've used the Renewable Energy Fund, which is why I wanted to make sure that Peter Krimp was here to discuss the criteria that we've used with Renewable Energy Fund and how that may be applied to the projects that are subject to this. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to start with some easy stuff in the capital budget. There are several Alaska Energy Authority requested appropriations, including the Electrical Emergencies Program, which is a $330,000 capital request. This is something that we have received an appropriation for several years. We respond to emergencies in rural Alaska and help utilities who are at a point of either having a blackout or one is imminent, where we will go out and help make sure that the lights stay on. It's been a very successful program, and we work with about 100 communities and utilities in rural Alaska to make sure that they receive this type of emergency support. It is truly a life, health, safety issue. Another request that we have in this capital budget is for energy projects, which is a $16 million request that includes bulk fuel, RPSU, and also some energy plan implementation funds. The bulk fuel program has been a longstanding AEA program that we partner with the Denali Commission. It has evolved over the years to become more of more state funds involved and less federal dollars, and the same with the RPSU program. Of this $16 million request, $10 million is state funds. The expectation would be $6 million would be used for RPSU projects, $3 million would be used for bulk fuel projects, and $1 million for energy plan implementation. And just to talk a bit about that energy plan implementation, there have been, my predecessor, Steve Hagenson, had led up an effort to develop a energy pathway, which was a guideline and essentially a working tool for communities to use to help determine what projects would make sense for their communities. And what we would like to do with the $1 million request is to now work more on a regional basis to work through the issues with communities and regions to help determine what projects make sense for their region. It's been an effort that has been driven very much by community input and local support. Right now, the Alaska Energy Authority is working in Southeast Alaska on an integrated resource plan that will help determine what projects make sense for that region. There are some areas of Southeast Alaska that are interconnected, and there are several areas that are not. A couple years ago, we also completed, or actually just last year it was published, is a rail belt integrated resource plan. For the funds for this $1 million, our expectation is that that we will be working in probably in the Bethel region to work with communities in that area with respect to their hydroelectric plans and some wind plans, and also the Tanana Chief Conference area. We have been working with Interior Alaska. The one thing I wanted to point out, too, is Mike Harper is our Deputy Director of Rural Energy. This is actually his last day. He is retiring, and the expectation is when we do fill his position, that would be something that person, the new Deputy Director of Rural Energy, will take up where Mike has left off and also continue to work with these regional plans and communities to really develop what projects make sense for their communities and regions. And in Alaska, sometimes it's not there are certain areas that we can interconnect, but there's several areas that we can. So, again, a lot of these projects are really community-driven.
I have a question from Representative Newman and then Representative Carapo.
Mr. Chair, in the regional discussion that you have on the distribution of these funds, do you try and split that up evenly throughout the state? Or what I'm concerned about is sometimes we have money and we feel like we have to spend it because you want to try and get that regional balance. Although it may be more appropriate to have some money going, extra money going towards one area instead of another area of the state. I want to make sure that doesn't happen. And how do you also work with the local utility companies through the rail belt process to develop these plans?
Let me take that in a couple parts. We try to make our decisions and where the funds that were appropriated to go in a fair manner. There are some areas that need more. Some areas are more complicated, and the planning process would be more expensive. In other areas, it's not that difficult, especially when you are talking about a more localized community. A lot of the information that's already been developed in the pathway really takes them to that next step. And what we're trying to do with some of the regional plan is to work in areas where either they've asked for our assistance or we know that there's some additional work that needs to be done. And Southeast Integrated Resource Plan is in one area. We've been appropriated specific money. We've put some planning money from last year towards that project. And my expectation is, depending on what additional work needs to be done, because that project's going to be very detailed, we may need to put more money towards that region. But it's a lot of communities and a lot of communities that aren't necessarily connected through the SEPA network, which is the former Fordham pool. So there are a lot of communities involved. So we're not committed to where if we spend $1 in Nome, we have to spend $1 in Southeast Alaska. We're trying to make sure that we provide the resources and the technical assistance that communities need. And then with respect to the, I think your question on the utilities and the rail belt, we have, I believe, have worked very successfully with the rail belt utilities and developing the rail belt integrated resource plan. And a lot of the projects actually that are in this Section 4 right now have been supported and put forth by the rail belt utilities that belong to ARCTEC, which is the energy company that's been established with the railroad utilities, except for MLMP. So those projects that have been put forth, most of them on the transmission, are also identified as important projects for the transmission system and a robust transmission system in the railroad area, which, of course, comes from that IRP. The expectation is when the Southeast Integrated Resource Plan is done, we'll have a similar type of list of projects that make sense for communities and other projects that make sense for potential connecting some communities.
Very well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, if I might, an opening statement to frame why I believe that we're in Anchorage today and why the particular people that are going to speak to us today have value both to our communities and to the House Finance Committee. Mr. Chairman, we've been presented via the Senate a concept to tie a group of projects, almost $460 million worth of projects, together. And the intent, as I understand it, is to see if that's a good idea or a bad and try to understand the other body's perspective and why they're presenting that language to Alaskans and to the House to consider. So along those lines, we've tied the Alaska Energy Program that Sarah just spoke to, the bulk fuel energy, the proposal before us, Mr. Chairman, from the other body. And for those listening, I'm trying to keep the decorum from the House of Representatives, but we tend not to say the other body's name, so we're referring to the Senate.
You can say Senate here.
We can. Okay.
There's a reason that they're the folks that made this necessary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so from Sarah, what I'm trying to learn, and I hope that that Alaskans will learn, is that we have this group of $460 million worth of projects that's all or nothing. And is that a good way to move forward when we're looking at bulk fuel? Is that a good thing to look at when we talk about weatherization in the home energy rebate program in a closed-door meeting where Senator Stevens and Senator Meyer came and spoke with the majority caucus? The Speaker Chenault and our leadership team asked why we would tie these really good projects together. And so, Sarah, I'm just in an all-or-nothing scenario if this would move forward to the governor's desk and it were to be vetoed. Can you talk to me about what would happen with the bulk fuel upgrades that are in this and the weatherization programs if it's all or nothing? And I don't know what some of these other projects are, but I do know the great programs that we have that all Alaskans access. So can you speak to me about, and I'm sure Dan Fauske will get to the weatherization per se, but I'm looking at tens of projects, many projects in here that I don't know anything about on an individual basis. And so I guess the question to you is, on the projects that I see on page 100 that continue on to 101 that all start AEA, have they had the same review process? And do we know that they integrate into regional plans to support reducing costs for energy via the region making that input and asking for those projects?
through the chair, Representative Faircloth, I guess maybe to take a stab at some of this. If these projects were of an, I guess, an all or nothing package, the project that I had mentioned, we would be hindered on being able to continue with some longstanding AEA programs, the bulk fuel upgrade program, the electrical emergency program, and the RPSU upgrades are vital really to our rural energy infrastructure program. We are actually nearing completion to a lot of the bulk fuel projects that we started 10 years ago with the Denali Commission that I've identified. We're getting pretty close to finishing up with the projects that we think we can move forward with. The RPSU program we're not quite as far along with, and we still have a long ways to go. And so we would have, at least with that funding not being there, we would have several projects that we would not be able to move forward with, including a design fund to it's a pipeline process. We design 1 year and we construct for the next 2 years typically. So if we are limited with funds and we have somewhat of a gap in that type of funding, we will be delayed on doing a lot of needed upgrades. This also includes the Sitna hydroelectric project, the money that we have, the legislation that passed. Proud to say that the legislation passed unanimously in both the House and the Senate. It was very nice that is a priority project that everybody, I think, feels is necessary to move forward with. Our plan is to start that FERC process and with the preliminary application to FERC. These funds also would be, if you recall, the fiscal notes that were associated with Senate Bill 42, include fiscal notes to hire staff to move forward with this project and also, developing a project office. It would be, we do have some funds available from FY 2011. It would be very difficult to hire staff that are going to be the primary people to help the agency move forward with this project without knowing how long we would have funds available. And so, I would be concerned about how, there is a priority to aggressively move forward with the Sitna. It would be very difficult to do that if this funding wasn't available.
Is there perhaps some type of limitation on how many times the Sitna can be blackmailed or held hostage? In my adult life, it seems to be the history of that project. That's not a real, that's more of a statement, sir.
I understand, Mr. Chairman.
Representative, before we go to Representative Guerra, I want to note that concerning the other senators here, Senator Huggins came in, and Miles Baker, the chief of staff for Senator Sidman. Welcome, Miles. Representative Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow up, we all know, and I don't want to presuppose to speak for anyone, that energy is an important issue that's critical to all Alaskans, and to try to support providing affordable energy is a goal of all of us. Of the projects that we're looking at that are linked together, is there an issue with capacity at all? I heard you say about the weatherization and the all or nothing isn't good for components that we know are quality projects going forward that we know all Alaskans benefit from. But there's another whole group of projects that will from your words, if I heard you correctly, require additional work from AEA. So what kind of capacity limitations do you have in front of you is my first question. And my second is, did you request everything to be linked together in the way that's being presented today as a company?
Through through the chair, Representative Fairclough, let me start with the ARC-tech-driven projects that really resulted from the railroad utilities and the IRP process. Those individual projects...
We're all familiar with them here, but the folks listening may not be, other than all the utility folks out there.
And, you know, Mr. Chairman, I wrote it down, and I thought maybe if I wrote it down about 20 times, I'd actually remember what it stood for. It's the Alaska Rail Belt Cooperative Transmission and Energy Company. The members include Chugach Electric, MEA, that's the Matanuska Electric, Golden Valley, Seward, the City of Seward, and Homer Electric Association. And again, the only utility that's missing from that is MLMP, a municipally owned utility. So let me start with those projects. Those aren't projects that were endorsed by AEA. They weren't submitted by AEA to the governor for projects. However, ARC-tech and the utilities, we do run really under a kind of a maximum utility control process, and we work together with utilities to develop the IRP. And the projects that we own, the Alaska Intertie and the Bradley Lake Hydroelectric Project, we manage essentially with utilities. So they had told me when they were going to submit this list of projects to the legislators in the area that they had requested that they all come through AEA. And I was fine with them being submitted through AEA. I think what I heard from a lot of ARC-tech folks is that it's an opportunity for AEA to, work with utilities in another manner beyond planning. It's actually building projects and working through projects that this idea of building a transmission system and a robust transmission system is important as we pursue a new large project. And so it is one way to kind of continue to link the utilities and AEA to work together on this regional plan that, of course, serves over half the population of the of the state. So they requested those projects to come through AEA. And the projects, there's a couple projects that are owned by AEA. The Battle Creek Diversion is an extension or an expansion of the Bradley Lake Hydroelectric Project. And there's a $5 million appropriation for the repairs on the Alaska Intertie. So those, obviously make sense to come through AEA. And the other ones, again, through the IRP, have been identified as projects that are important, and a lot of them are really repairing existing and aging transmission lines. So I think it does give AEA an opportunity to be involved in that, and then also to make sure that the design of the project and the rebuilding of these continue to conform with kind of the intent of the IRP, which is again to build a robust system. Some of these are repairing to a certain voltage or capacity, and the IRP recommends that there is an increased capacity to I think 230 kV. I think what we would want to do with the utilities of these lines that they own and with issuing those grants is to make sure that we understand what design that they would be working on and whether it is still meeting the spirit and the intent of the IRP and kind of really working with utilities to do that. So with respect to capacity, since these are most of these would be grants, I believe probably I will need another project manager to work with the utilities and through these grants. However, at this point, I need to do some internal kind of assessment and allocation of resources and see if we need a new position, if we have a vacant position that is able to be filled with someone to continue to work in this, and also just to assess the capacity of our existing staff. So there's a lot of internal work that we need to do, but again, I think the these projects that are more the architect requests do make sense to come through AEA and to be evaluated. They are part of this group that should be evaluated, criteria similar to the Renewable Energy Grant Fund. That actually doesn't really fit with a lot of these projects for transmission. However, you know, there are certain aspects of a criteria that we could, you know, make sure that these projects fit. And I guess I'd probably take it to mean that it really is establishing or kind of meeting the intent of that regional plan that we've developed with the utilities. Some of the other projects that are in here, so there's these ARCTEC projects, and then there's also projects that we've seen through the Renewable Energy Fund. And those actually, of course, evaluating them through the criteria of the Renewable Energy Fund program is pretty simple because we've already seen them. I guess the one thing that we would probably do with respect to those projects is evaluate them on what we've been doing with the Renewable Energy Fund program is funding through phases up to certain points. There's a feasibility design and then construction. Some of these projects may not be quite ready for the amount of funds that are listed here. And so that would be one way we could evaluate them and have grant conditions based upon milestones. So we may not grant the entire amount of money that's listed here, but a portion of it. I did want to point out the one thing that's a little that I'm not quite sure what to do with is if the 50% state funding threshold, if there is a recommendation that it exceeds that, we're supposed to have some type of reappropriation in February back to the legislature. And I'm not quite sure what to do with that because I'm not sure, does that mean I shouldn't be issuing grants to AEA? I shouldn't issue grants up until that point or not? And so those are, I do have some questions with respect to this language, and I would want to make sure that the legislature understands what type of criteria we'd be looking at under particular projects. So that is a concern. And there are some projects that are listed here that I don't think are appropriate for the 50% match requirement.
So under that language, those projects would be potentially available to reappropriate other projects, say city halls or other things within another way it's written?
Through the chair, that I would agree with that. I think that would be available for reappropriation. It doesn't say
any other projects within the legislative district. So that's one of the concerns I had the way it was written with that, you know, stringent deadline tied together as a energy policy, but then available when they don't pencil out or they're just not within such a short deadline, they'd be available for individual reappropriation. That's your reading as well?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm not quite sure. That is a little puzzling to me. And then, again, with the 50% of the total investment to fully complete each project, the concern I have there is the definition of total investments required to complete each project. There are a couple of these projects that, I guess, for example, the project that's listed here for Mount Spur for funds to go to Ormat, it's listed as $18 million of state funds. Well, that project, if built, is going to be over $400 million. So is it for every dollar needed for the drilling that's expected to be done with this money, for every dollar spent that state funds Ormat puts in a dollar? That's what I'm not sure, or is it cumulative?
You know the difference between Ormat and Ormat Nevada, Inc., LLC, or the two. There's two appropriation lines, and what is Ormat Nevada, LLC, I believe. That one is.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's a subsidiary of that, and that's one thing that there are a couple projects that are I think what you've touched on is an issue where there is, in this Section 4, all of the Renewable Energy Fund programs for Round 4 that we have evaluated and that Peter has headed up that effort, are all of those individual projects are in this section. And so there are some projects that are in both. There is an ORMAT request for funds that made it through the Renewable Energy Fund program criteria and recommendation process. And then there's also these additional funds that were requested of state dollars to move forward with the drilling efforts. So
yeah,
I.
I just kind of find out the relevance of why it was a Nevada corporation. It's unusual to find those types of things in our appropriation lines on a take it or leave it project list. But anyway, we can come back to that. Representative Fairclough, I know you had a real broad.
Thank you.
I've been interrupted several times. I'm sorry.
That's fine, Mr. Chairman. On the projects that haven't went through the screening by AEA, will there be, if we continue forward and it comes to the House in its current form, is there prioritization on the projects, at least that you haven't, how will you prioritize your investments? And I'm sure that if people are listening today from the Senate that they'll address your concerns and try to make sure that the language is clear. So I certainly don't want to be disparaging towards putting things together, but that's what we're trying to deal with only having just a glimpse at what has happened. So of the projects that start AEA that you need to look at, how will you prioritize what's the right type of infrastructure to put in place? Because we're creating expectations, I guess that's where I'm trying to get to, Mr. Chairman, is that if I'm in Healy, then I'm going to want my project to go forward today, and I'm going to want AEA to take care of it. Or if I'm in Seward, I'm going to want that project taken care of, and it was in the capital budget. How with so many projects at one time, will that work for AEA? Do we have to prioritize what you're doing, and how will you make that prioritization decision?
Through the chair, Representative Fairclough, I guess the way we've done it with past renewable energy fund programs, if all funded, we'll have over 70 individual projects and grants to process. It does take a bit of effort, but we've actually gotten pretty good at it with respect to developing the grant agreements. A lot of this stuff has come through an application process. And so we know the projects, we know the scopes of work, and it's a matter of really processing the paperwork. And so again, as for round four, although there's a lot in volume, our process I think is pretty well streamlined. Typically, we will, you know, assuming an appropriation takes effect on July 1, we will work with the grantees for the first 2 months. And I think even, you know, standard for most grant programs is, you know, we should have a grant in place within 60 days. That's typically our goal. And typically, if there's going to be delays, oftentimes it's on the other end. There may be some issues of concern with some grantees. And that's the Renewable Energy Fund program. So with these projects, as far as the prioritization on the work, we'll have to we'll have to work with the entities that are identified in here, and in particular with their projects on which ones need to go forward, you know, sooner rather than later. When would they be expecting money to move forward? So we have most of our project managers that would be involved with these projects report to Peter, and we'd have to be just prioritizing the work with respect to which projects need to be done, and we'll have to assess again our internal resources on. What we need to make sure that these are successful. It can be a bit of a painful process and also very tiring. So there's a lot of times that, you know, there's folks that, you know, come in and work on the weekends, and we try to get the you know, kind of the I guess the egg through the snake, or, you know, as quickly as we can on a lot of these projects. And then once the grants are out, then it's just a matter of you know, basically it's usually reimbursement process. So those kind of come in as the grantees are spending the money. And there's definitely busier times than others. I guess with respect to the criteria, the Renewable Energy Fund program, of the projects in round in this section four, the projects that went through the Renewable Energy Fund program went through a specific criteria. You know, the applications came in. We evaluate projects on the where the high-cost areas are. That's where the most weight is. Significant weight for match, and significant weight for regional, statewide regional spreading. And so that's kind of
that's our statutory framework to develop a process and a criteria to rank the projects. And we work with the Renewable Energy Fund Advisory Committee to rank those individual projects through that process. The way I read these other projects that we may have seen through the Renewable Energy Fund program, there's a couple things. Although we have significant weight for match, these projects now would be required to have a match through this this 50% language. And we wouldn't be, I don't think, doing any type of a ranking or evaluation of which projects to do or any type of a statewide balance. There are specific projects that are listed here, so that's where the criteria similar to that established for the Renewable Energy Fund, that's where we have to be pretty flexible on that, because one of the major things on the Renewable Energy Fund is, you know, some type of a statewide balance. That wouldn't be necessary to have for that criteria. I think I look at that as that what we're probably looking at is grant conditions that would be appropriate for some of those projects. And again, it goes back to milestones and then also making sure that permits are in place and power sales agreements in particular are in place before we release money such as construction funds.
We have four people in the queue here, Representative Guerra, Costello, Newman, and Edgman. I'm going to go to the folks that haven't asked questions and we'll then come back and then ask if there's anybody in Juneau that wanted to get in the queue for questions as well. So Representative Costello, Edgman, and then Guerra and Newman.
Thank you. Through the chair. Sarah, you know, when we look at this list, it includes projects that have been publicly vetted, some for decades, and others that some of us have never heard of before. And so I was wondering what your opinion is about the process that this legislation is putting forward in terms of how the state goes about its energy policy. I mean, when we are asked to look at all of these projects and evaluate them as a whole now instead of individually project by project, do you see that as the best way for the state to be creating its energy policy, or do you see a better way to move forward with our energy policy?
Through the chair, Representative Costello, that said, I need to probably be a bit careful on how I answer that question, mainly because I'm usually not, except for the projects that have been in, that are in the capital budget, that were in the governor's budget. I've always been, tried to be very clear with legislators and folks that are looking for AEA's forward opinion if they are looking for us to weigh in on particular projects. I try to make sure people understand that I'm not here to, you know, either advocate for a project or not, or one project or another. That I can tell you how we would manage the project if it is in the budget, and that's, I guess, what I'm hoping to make sure that I provide to the committee, is that if this language stays as what version T has and what's in here, there are individual projects that we would have to do some work on to, you know, work with the potential grantees. And again, I'm not, I'm trying to make sure that I don't, I'm not putting any type of a bias on whether I think one project is good or another, because I don't think there's really been criteria established on what projects are in or out, except for the Renewable Energy Fund grants. Those projects in this list have gone through a process, and there are criteria to develop, and a public process and a public application process. These other projects, again, we've seen, we typically know about them through a variety of ways, but they're not projects that that AEA has necessarily. We haven't put those projects forward to the governor and requested him to put into his budget that was released on December 15th. So again, I kind of, you know, through this process, typically,
you know, I find out that things are in the budget, and I usually tell folks this is how we would manage it if this is how it would go through. And I've had conversations with several legislators on that, including, I think, a couple days ago I talked to Representative Seaton with respect to the Homer Area Natural Gas Pipeline, you know, with respect to that project. And that's, again, one of those that came up with a $10 million appropriation for that particular project. How do you define that project scope in order to determine whether 50% is, whether that 50% matches for the total build out of that distribution system or not? And so I guess, again, I'm probably repeating myself at this point, is that we're just looking at this is how we would manage it, how this language is in here. I'm trying not to say, again, I don't have criteria to base it on. It's hard to say whether, you know, one project should be a priority over another one, just how they manage. And I guess that's when I run for office and I'm elected, that's when I'll make, you know, those types of statements, I guess.
And Representative Costello is going to interject that Fisher Cove is probably not just being circumspect because the bill's still in the Senate, but she is really a policy wonk and not a politician. And that my years that I've known her, even when she did work in politics, she was more of a policy person. So, Representative Costello.
So I think what is especially concerning for me is that the project is an all or nothing. If the bill were to come over to us, we would be faced as it is. It's an all or nothing scenario. So could you just briefly talk about, in the case that if nothing, none of these get funded, could you talk about how the future of energy in Alaska would be affected in that, if that were to be the case that occurs?
Through the chair, Representative Costello, I guess if the outcome was nothing, where these projects and you know, there are in my opinion, and hopefully not to contradict what I just said, I mean there aren't necessarily bad projects. I think these are priorities for communities and legislators. But if it wasn't, if this was a nothing scenario. I guess every project listed here, there's $10 million associated with the Southeast Energy Fund. The Southeast Energy Fund was repealed and reenacted last year, and the intention would be that, you know, when the IRP is done, and probably with some type of either regulations or some type of a solicitation process, we could potentially issue grants with those funds for projects that have been identified then through a regional plan that would be important to Southeast Alaska. So, you know, those projects wouldn't be able to move forward. And I've mentioned before that, you know, we would be quite a bit hindered on making significant progress on the Susitna project. And again, all of our rural programs that we have worked with in the past and have had consistent capital funding and very good support from the legislature to continue on with those important programs. Those are kind of the Denali Commission legacy programs that the reason the Denali Commission was established was really to move forward with bulk fuel upgrades and then the RPSU programs, at least, and other non-energy related programs. So, you know, we would have trouble with, you know, moving forward in any consistent manner that we have in the past for those programs. With respect to some of these other projects that would be all or nothing, there's a lot of projects that I believe are ready for construction that if the project was successful to be funded through the capital budget and it was a nothing scenario, it would potentially delay funding. There are certain times that any project that has a FERC license, there is a certain deadline for when you need to construct or begin construction of a project. And so there could be some, if state support is expected and is not available, there could be some delays for projects and potentially, I assume there could be some permits or some licenses in jeopardy if progress hasn't been made. I just make that as a general statement. I'm not, you know, in particular on some of these projects, I'm not quite sure.
And I know when he's up here, Mr. Fox, he can explain to you then that impact on the AHSC projects that would be that are also listed in here.
Representative Edgman, thank you, Representative Stella.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Setting aside the you know, the reason that we're here today, and that is because there's differences between the House and Senate on whether nearly $400 million worth of energy projects should be clustered together in an all-or-nothing fashion, and that's sort of a political situation as well as maybe a legal situation. But setting that all aside, it really strikes me that when you look at these list of projects, there's 20 of them in this proposed capital budget from the Senate, that we're looking at 20 of them at almost $400 million or so, but they're big numbers, $25 million, $18 million, $28 million, $15 million, $10 million, there's a $17 million project in here. If these projects were to go through, if they're education projects, they would go through the Department of Education, they'd be vetted, they'd go through a process, a ranking system, they'd be prioritized, both on the maintenance side as well as construction and design side. If they were transportation projects, they'd do the same to the Department of Transportation. When I look at some of these projects, there's a lot of good projects in here. These are not, as you and I were talking a couple of days ago, just sort of willy-nilly placed in the budget. But these are projects as well that, to me, don't have the framework that House Bill 152 that set the Renewable Energy Grant Fund in 2008 that's directed towards communities of 10,000 or less and tied to renewable projects, so on and so forth. But these other projects in here, there's a lot of them that are tied towards utilities who aren't involved in renewable energy projects. But we don't have the framework, it seems to me, to really address some of these projects. We don't have the funding mechanisms in the budget at this point. We don't have maybe the policy background that we should have in law and so forth. Again, setting aside the whole issue that we're here today, which is, you know, the overriding issue, but I want to hear your comments about, are we in fact sort of all collectively being caught flat-footed because we spent millions of dollars studying the railroad energy situation? You know, there's been two big studies, and this all has brought us to the point where I was sitting at, which I support, and I think we should go forward with. But at the same time, we've got a lot of aging infrastructure, a lot of aging transmission lines, a lot of aging utility infrastructure that needs to be addressed. And we don't really have, through the existing power project fund, which is listed in the energy policy, which we passed a couple of years ago as being sort of the primary funding mechanism, we don't really have a way to fund these projects. So here we are today with the Senate just sort of putting them all in and very stubbornly clumping them together and saying, they all go together or they all die together. But is that maybe an inaccurate characterization to say that we're to some degree being caught a little flat-footed here because we don't have a way to fund some of these very good projects that are in here?
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, I guess the projects that we've seen in this section that are part of the Renewable Energy Fund, or that we've seen through the Renewable Energy Fund on prior amounts, I think one of the things that is maybe a bit of a limitation of the Renewable Energy Fund program is we have an evaluation process, and then we've also had caps set on the rounds 1 through 4. And so when we solicit and when we set up the RFA, we're telling folks if you're in a high cost area, you can get up to $4 million, and we've had a cumulative cap on that. So for one project, it can only be $4 million. And for a low cost area, which is really the Rail Belt area and then some parts of Southeast Alaska, it's a $2 million cap. So I think some projects that may be ready for construction have worked with individual legislators to have them submitted into the budget. And so I guess with respect to evaluation, whether those are good projects or not, I'm not certain if flat-footed is maybe the correct characterization. I think this is a mechanism that project advocates have used to, whether it's an education project, a transportation project, or in this case an energy project, there's a mechanism to get specific projects into a capital budget. And this is, I guess this is one way to do it. With respect to these aging transmission projects, I'm not certain that we would be considered flat-footed on that one either. There have been railroad studies. There has been the GRETC legislation that did not pass last year. However, the utilities did do one important thing that we asked them to do, which is organize. And ARCTEC has been created. And I think as an entity, ARCTEC has put forward projects that they think are reasonable projects that would make sense to be funded. And looking at them and looking at the IRP that we sponsored and worked with the railroad utilities, as you mentioned, I think those are, I think they're, reasonable projects. I think the issue is what's the criteria that gets them into the budget and not, and I don't know what that criteria was, and is there any type of a priority ranking? And that, again, is I don't know. I don't think ARCTEC as a group necessarily put particular projects in a priority ranking. I don't know. I guess I'm not sure if I'm getting close to answering your question on that. I think, again, there's a lot of things that have happened the last 2 years after the development of the Renewable Energy Fund. And we know a lot more about particular and specific projects than we did, prior to that fund. So I think, again, there's good information out there and good information with respect to some specific projects. But, again, the criteria of what gets into a capital budget or not is not I'm in the reactionary part of this. I don't know if I've ever been called a wonk before, but I feel it's our job to kind of react to what you guys want us to do for the priorities.
And just to follow up, Mr. Chairman, so would Alaska Energy Authority be better suited to prioritize these projects if you had more established policy that you could work with, more guidelines, if you will? And I ask that question because I'm hearing in your answer, although sort of indirectly, I'm hearing that the Alaska Energy Authority hasn't really had an opportunity to sort of prioritize some of these bigger projects, maybe haven't been able to vet them fully. You think they're good projects. They're not tied to the Renewable Energy Grant Fund, which is a very limited stream of money that goes into renewable energy projects tied to communities, 10,000 or less. But you don't really have the ability to, at this point, recommend large-scale projects like this or to provide the legislature sort of the criteria and how legislature you should fund the project in Kodiak or the one in Sitka over the one in Ketchikan over the one in Copper River Valley, or maybe the one up in the Golden Valley. I mean, I don't think you have that kind of mechanism, and that's why I used maybe wrongly but the term flat-footed, because I think a lot of these projects I think are good, but there's a couple here that I think are suspect in my view. But at the same time, I don't know that you have the ability, number one, to vet them, or number two, that you have maybe the capability to vet them.
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, if maybe approach this a different way, if we were similar to how the Renewable Energy Fund is established, we're required through legislation to solicit funds every year and then provide a recommended list to the legislature. A couple things there. For round five, which is the Renewable Energy Fund is actually set to sunset in 2013. So for round five, we've already talked, and I believe I've testified in other committees too, that we've talked about looking at round five a little bit differently and working with the REFAT committee on perhaps not having caps and looking at projects in a little bit more of a different manner, taking a look at those. And we also have committed to working with the REFAT committee to evaluate, the good and the bad with respect to the program, what's worked, what's not, what would we recommend as changes. And I have testified also the one thing that's tough for us to do with the renewable energy program, it's a grant recommendation program. Right now, and they're listed in this capital budget, there's about 70 projects or so that we think are good projects that have met our criteria and that have been ranked. We've known those projects since January, but we're stuck not providing a and it's a statutory thing. We can't issue grants until starting in July when a capital budget is done. So it would be nice to get to a process where when if funds are made available, we can issue grants once we know which projects are the ones that meet the criteria and that should be funded. I guess with respect to, you know, would we prioritize these things? Well, we haven't been asked to prioritize them. If told or through a process or through an appropriation, prioritize them and do the projects that are at the top of the list, we would. And actually, the Denali Commission program, so the energy projects that I mentioned, have been established that way. We have criteria that's been established. It was established 10 years ago, and we did basically a ranking list of the projects that need to be done. So we go down that list. So the priorities have been established, and there are certain times that one project may get hung up that may be a higher priority, but the community may not meet certain criteria. They may not meet a sustainability criteria, or there could be other issues that we then move down the list. And that had been our direction from the Denali Commission, and we, you know, through that program, we continue to follow that where we do have priorities, and we move down the list. But again, I guess with respect to how this is written, how it's going to be written as the final outcome, you know, essentially we're a state corporation. We have statutory responsibilities through the Renewable Energy Fund, and then also we're directed to do certain things through capital projects. If there was a dollar amount provided to fund a regional, you know, transmission project, if that's how it was restructured, or if that's something that would be done, which required AEA to establish a priority and rank the project, we would work with the affected utilities and the utilities to come up with that some type of ranking and a priority process.
Before we go, Representative Benjamin, before we go to Representative Garrett Newman, Representative Benjamin brought up the policy project for the big projects. I think we did have a process, Senate Bill 42 for one of the big ones, multi-year process, first the initial studies, and I think we had to drag it all the way into special session. It's been a while now, a couple weeks from that, but there's one project in here I don't think a lot of Alaskans are familiar with, and that's the New Vista Energy. It says $17,630,000, and then if you read the backup, it's the preliminary costs are $483 million, and then it has a potential cost of $500 million for transmission lines to serve about 6,000 people. And I'm not evaluative, but this is, I just want to make sure if when we're talking about big projects, we just went through a pretty serious multi-year vetting process on the, it's been multi-decade on this Ascendant process. But can you, just for the public's edification, just describe a little bit about the potential cost of this New Vista, because it shows up as a $17,630,000 project, and what the potential scope of costs are, so we know what the scope we're dealing with in this bill, with this take it or leave it.
Representative Stoltz, I'm, for the record, Peter Kremp, Deputy Director of Alternative Energy and Energy Efficiency. I'll take a crack at answering that.
And provide numbers, if you will.
Oh, gosh. I may have to get back to
even if they're just general numbers.
Okay, sure.
Ballpark. We're dealing with a lot of unknowns here.
This project is addressing hydroelectric development in the Bethel area. The two projects that are in question are Chicoominic Hydro and Kisaralik Hydro, a couple large projects to the south of Bethel and the hills between Dillingham and Bethel. The purpose of the project, and this is a follow-on to a round two RE fund project that the ABCP, the regional nonprofit, and Association of Village Council Presidents and the Chilista region. It's a feasibility study. It is part of hydro development, renewable energy development in that area. From what we understand, the $17 million in our discussions with Chalissa and others in the NuVista group, that would bring a large-scale project such as that through FERC licensing and permitting. From our standpoint, it would be a number of years. If we had reviewed this through the RE fund, we would probably make a suggestion for a phased development and phased funding as part of the regional energy plan for the lower YK, Yukon-Kuskokwim. And that plan, that regional plan, is something that we are actively working with NuVista Power and Light, which is a consortium of utilities and nonprofits, of course, Chalista and others in the lower Yukon-Kuskokwim region. So we, in terms of numbers, we think it would probably be reasonable in a year time frame for about a $3 million allocation for this project to move it forward through stream gauging, the feasibility assessments, the detailed technical work that would need to be completed.
I don't speak bureaucraties all the time. I asked about the numbers, and you guys, Sarah, can you help me out on this? I threw out there's a number written into the budget backup of $483 million, and is there an aversion to mentioning that number? And then the numbers of transmission costs have been mentioned, and I've been told this is located in the largest state park in the world, Woodchuck State Park, and we're dealing with this. Apparently, the familiarity of members isn't as great, and you're not able to grasp what the potential costs are. You could probably talk pretty conversely about Susitna, but either there's an avoidance, or I'm detecting. But I thought I asked the question pretty directly. Maybe I'm clumsy, but I mentioned numbers. And
if I may respond to that
directly and concisely, please.
Okay. The planning level number at this point for that that project is at this point $483.5 million. That is based on the work that has been done by MWH, the contractor, to date. Now, this is very low level feasibility. And at AEA, we would not put too much stock on this number until there has been more detailed work. There's not yet a conceptual design. We haven't, the grantee has not yet arrived at the proper route. There are fish issues in some of the potential project locations. The size of the project would need
so that number could be low, perhaps?
That number may be high. It may be infeasible to go after if the habitat or land ownership issues were such that were not feasible. There may be much better projects that would cost less and be at a lower scope, but it is too early to say at this point.
Well, I didn't want to make any evaluative suggestions about whether it's a good or bad project. I don't think the public knows a lot about it. It was pretty hard to wrench information from you. So, Representative Guerra.
Sure. I'm going to ask just for Representative Faircloth properly sort of share her opinions on a few things first, and then one or two questions. I would like to have the same ability to do that. I'll try and keep the comments short and then go into the questions, if that's okay with you.
Yes, Representative Guerra.
Thank you. I think the worst thing that we can do is inflame tensions between the House and the Senate at this point. And I know the House, or many House members are frustrated with this conditional language in the Senate's appropriation, and I frankly think that that can be removed pretty easily. But in fairness to the folks in the Senate, When they didn't pass the governor's oil tax bill, the governor issued a veto threat. And their response was to put in conditional language to protect their projects from that veto threat. That's water under the bridge. I think we can get rid of this conditional language if the House and the Senate and the governor sit down and decide which of these projects are appropriate. So I hope we can spend a lot of the hearing talking about that. And then, frankly, I think all that conditional language disappears because nobody will need it. Let me go through first. I've heard this concept that some of these projects haven't been vetted. And I want to go through the ones that have been vetted just so we can take those off the table. There's a consortium you mentioned, Ms. Fisher Goad, led by Chugach Electric called, is it Arctic?
It's Arctic, and I'm not certain it's led by Chugach Electric, but it's the five utilities.
Right. And they listed a number of rail belt projects. The projects went from substations to a cooking with gas gathering system, power line upgrades, power line repairs. Some of those projects are aimed to reduce the cost of energy for consumers by upgrading efficiency, and some of those are repairs that are needed. But hasn't every single one of those projects gone through the Rail Belt Integrated Resources Plan, every one of those projects?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, I don't recall that the Cook Inlet gas study was one that was in that was specific on the Rail Belt Integrated Resource Plan. And in addition, I'm not certain if the word specific power switch is also. So I can't say definitively that they are all with the Integrated Resource Plan, but most are.
That's fair. And if there are some that haven't gone through the Rail Belt Integrated Resources Plan, we should know about those. But and then the Rail Belt Integrated Resources Plan, that was something that was funded by the legislature. We hired Black and Veatch to go through necessary projects, and they came out with a list which included most of these projects, maybe not the couple that you mentioned. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So those are the Rail Belt projects. And just this whole idea that these projects haven't been vetted, I think those projects have been vetted, except for maybe the couple that you say might not have been part of that report.
Madam Chair, I was just a little confused. I sat through a number of those hearings with Black and Veatch, and I looked through the many hundreds of pages of analysis, didn't read all of it, but I don't remember any of these projects being individually vetted through that process like the Alaska Energy Authority has with some of these other projects.
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, the transmission projects are part of the IRP and I think Section 12 of the IRP. They are described there, and they are listed as projects that are important to a robust transmission. And I mentioned before too that there, you know, a lot of these are repair projects, and there is a concept of increasing the capacity of these of some of these lines, and that would be one thing that you know, through this process of these projects. Maintain and AEA is involved in working with the utilities on them. That would be one thing we'd want to address is to make sure that we're not that you know these repairs are necessary, but making sure that that kind of the long-term aspect and the intent of the IRP is met too by potentially increasing the capacity in some of these lines.
Just a quick follow-up. And so what you're telling me is that from a macro point of view, they've all been recognized as being integral parts. The whole rail belt affordable energy plan going forward, but in terms of actually bearing down and vetting them individually and putting them through some kind of ranking prioritization, that hasn't occurred.
Through the chair, yes, that is correct. That has not occurred. And in fact, the IRP is very specific that these projects haven't been prioritized. That was outside of the scope of the IRP.
I'd have to say, I've been in the legislature for 9 years, and most of the projects in the capital budget have never been prioritized by any independent agency. And I'd also note that the members of that Rail Belt group are in the audience, and if folks have questions, I hope they'd be invited up to the table so they could
explain those projects. So those projects were identified as important in the Rail Belt Integrated Resources Plan. That's one group. The other group you have is the Renewable Energy Fund projects, but those are projects that are capped at $4 million, and those are ones that we have, nobody's disputing. Those have gone through a ranking process, correct?
Through the chair, they went through a ranking process for particular parts of them. So I guess I can't say that these projects that we've seen for the Renewable Energy Fund that are now in this Section 4 outside of the Renewable Energy Fund program, I don't know how they'd stand up or rank on their own. The one thing I'd like to point out to the committee, several months, well, seems like a long time ago, but I guess in March, Peter had put together, of the projects that we've seen through the Renewable Energy Fund programs and some that we've funded, he put together a list of potential projects that could be built within the next couple of years. There are two listings of that. One was projects that could potentially be constructed starting in 2012, and then some that could be potentially constructed in, it was 2014 to 2015. I have made that list available to folks that have wanted it. It was presented to the REFAC committee on March 1st. Some of these projects that we've seen through the Renewable Energy Fund, they're on that list, of course, because I think most of these are probably projects that are relatively close to construction through the Renewable Energy Fund, but not all of them. So there's a lot of projects that we've seen through the Renewable Energy Fund program that could potentially be ready for construction that are on a list that we've established, haven't made it through the capital budget. And that's the thing that, that's where we haven't ranked them and we haven't prioritized them. We just, in a regional presentation, we said these projects we've seen, these look reasonable. And that was one thing that, in 2008 when we were, when energy costs were high and we were looking at what projects to fund, I think there was a real sense of urgency, as I believe there is now, with respect to, identifying good projects that make sense to move forward. And it's probably taken a little bit longer than expected because you just can't, within 4 months, build projects. But since 2008, we have established projects through this program on knowing which ones are potentially ready to be constructed. I don't know if the list is perfect. There may be some that there could be some glitches. I know there's some Southeast projects that potentially have a roadless rule concern and a problem. There could be some permitting glitches. That happens all the time, especially in Alaska. So one project that may be ready right now may in several months be delayed for some reason.
Representative Kara. Thank you, through the chair. Ms. Fisher-Goetz, my goal is to actually just come up with a list of projects that the Senate and the House and the Governor can agree to. And so this is useful, this vetting process. I think the House Finance Committee should be vetting these projects. Let me go through this next group of projects. There's a series, inside this contingency language section, there's a series of rural power projects. They all exceed the $4 million cap in the Renewable Energy Fund, so they can't go through there. But I guess I would dispute that they haven't been vetted, and let me just go through them. There's the Akiak project, which has previously received funding from the legislature. AEA has vetted and helped with the conceptual design in 2008. So it's not like nobody's ever seen that project before. There's the Copper Valley Electric Association Allison Creek project, which has received renewable energy funding in the past and legislative funding in the past. So the legislature and AEA have looked at that, if not the last increment of funding that's in this budget, but looked at the project. There's the Eva Creek Wind Farm project, which has previously received state funding and a renewable energy grant in round four. There's the Gustavus Falls Creek project, which has received renewable energy funding in the past and state legislative funding, so the legislature and the governor have looked at that. There's the Homer Natural Gas Pipeline project. That's a $10 million project. It's previously received state funding, and this year they're seeking additional funding. In each of those projects, I understand that there might be some dispute about the current increment for that's being requested for those projects, but either the legislature or AEA has looked at every one of those projects as a project and said those are important projects if we're going to lower the cost of energy for people across the state of Alaska, no?
Through the chair, Chair, Representative Guerra, in the criteria of establishing the Renewable Energy Fund, yes, we've seen them, but again, that specific statutory criteria and a process. I guess when we say vetting or ranking, I think what we haven't been asked to do is we haven't, you know, these are projects in here that we're expected to, if this budget passes, to manage grants and issue grants, and there's some certain language in there that says that we can require certain things, and we would probably require certain grant conditions. However, we're not being asked to prioritize them. To me, when they're in the capital budget, they're priorities. So I guess I don't mean to dance around your question, but again, the ranking in the process is, you know, if you're comparing Eva Creek to Allison Creek, you know, or a wind project to a hydro project within the Renewable Energy Fund program, we've looked at them and we've ranked them, and there's been funding made available. If the criteria changes, the ranking may change, or the evaluation of the project may change, depending on what you want us to do with respect to a particular project or a set of projects.
If I might, just for a moment, it is my intent to try to include this particular conversation, this portion of our meeting, by 11 o'clock, so we have at least 30 minutes to talk about weatherization. Now, that's with the will of the committee. Representative Guerra, please continue.
There's
one other person in line.
Sure. Through the chair. And I left off another half of those rural projects, but most of the projects in that clause of this section have either been projects that have received AEA funding in the past or legislative funding in the past. Somebody has reviewed the projects. And I know AEA's job is to rank those projects that go through the Renewable Energy Fund, but those are those small $4 million projects. And I think it's the legislature's job to decide on the bigger projects. And I hope we can do that. I hope we can sit down with the Senate and the governor. We're never going to get out of the special session unless we all sit down together and decide which of these projects we're going to fund. But to say that these projects have never been vetted, almost all of them have been either gone through legislative approval or AEA vetting in the past. And unless I'm wrong, AEA has not historically ranked projects above the $4 million cap that doesn't fit within the Renewable Energy Fund. That's been a legislative prerogative in the past, unless I'm wrong about that.
Through the chair, I think any application that comes in the door, if we we'll rank them and we cap the amount of funds made available through the program. We don't necessarily not rank projects that are, you know, the ORMAT projects in here. The Eva Creek project has been in here. It's gone through the Renewable Energy Fund program. We've capped the amount made available through the program, but it's not that we've said, oh, that project's too big, we're not going to do anything with it. So it's the amount of money, not necessarily the size of the project.
Finally, good.
Representative Guerra.
I understand that you rank the ones that people send you through the Renewable Energy Fund, but those funds are capped at $4 million. In the past, the legislature has also funded bigger projects that people don't send through the Renewable Energy Fund. Those are a legislative prerogative for us to sit down with the Senate and the governor and figure out. And frankly, if we don't start doing that quickly, we're never going to get out of the special session. But that has never been an AEA prerogative to rank projects that don't go through the Renewable Energy Fund. We've funded energy projects across the state trying to lower the cost of energy for people without going through AEA. So I just don't want to create any misperception out there that we're not allowed to fund an energy project that doesn't go through the Renewable Energy Fund. We've done that for most of the energy projects in the state. And that's correct, isn't it?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, I think what you're saying is that the legislature has funded individual projects in a capital budget, and I believe that's what's been done in the past, and you are correct. Blue Lake actually is a great example. It's a project that's in here. But that project received a grant to name recipient or a grant to municipality a couple years ago, and we do manage that grant for commerce. It didn't go through a process, but it received funding as a legislative priority.
Thank you, Representative Guerra. And just to put a fine point on what I believe is the reason that we're here and at an impasse, it's to do with the process, not the projects in their individuality. I haven't heard anyone point out there may be concerns that we don't know enough about particular projects at this point, but the real issue, and I'll just speak for myself, others can speak for themselves, is that the process now links $460 million worth of projects together, and that is unacceptable. That we're trying to understand about those projects right now to find the grounding in why the Senate has chose to create linkage in all of these projects. But I appreciate wanting to compromise and take us out of special session and want to come home and be home with my family. But the issue is that the linkage is creating, from my perspective, an issue for the House in general. And Representative Guerra, I'll be happy to give you an opportunity to clarify. I know that you have good intent on what you're proposing. It doesn't fix my particular problem with the issue. My particular problem is we have $460 million worth of projects that can live or die on one red pen line instead of each project being presented in its entirety, standing alone, per se, to meet a red pin or pass through that red pin being a viable project. Representative Garrett, briefly, please.
I think maybe I was misunderstood. I don't think the Senate's contingency language is needed either. But in order to get rid of it, the Senate and the House and the governor are going to have to sit down, decide which projects are appropriate so the Senate doesn't fear vetoes that they are fearing because of what the governor said when they decided not to pass his oil tax bill.
Which isn't on the call. Which is not on the call. 110 is not on the call.
But the Senate is, I think they have a legitimate fear given what the governor said to them after.
Are you familiar with the bicameral process, Representative Garrett?
I think the Senate is legitimately fearful that their projects will be vetoed given what the governor said.
You should run for the Senate. We're going to stand briefly, and we're going to thank you, Ms. Fisher-Goad. And we'll take about a two-minute brief at ease while we let Mr. Pawlowski get ready to come up.
Thank you. Muted.
He says we're moving.
We're still on the record. On the record, Max has some donuts.
Max has some donuts. He's not paying any attention. Thank you.
we'll bang the gavel. Folks in Juneau still online?
Yes.
Finance members in Juneau?
Unmuted.
I'm not going to be here tomorrow, so somebody can deliver a box of donuts to an empty room here. Finance committee room in Juneau online?
Yes.
Okay, and be sure to pipe up if there are questions there. I've periodically asked if folks had questions that if you need to pipe up, let us know if you want to get in the queue. So, looks like we've got most of the people around the table. All right. Health Finance meeting in Anchorage, Alaska, the 29th of April is reconvened after a brief recess. Previously had a presentation by the AEA Executive Director. Now we have Dan Fowski, the CEO of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, which administers the energy rebate and the weatherization programs, which are contained in this Section 4 of Senate Bill 46, which is in our possession, but we're just discussing this one section of the bill today. Mr. Fowski, go ahead and introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Dan Fowski. I'm CEO of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Alongside me is Bob Breen, the Director of Research and Rural Development, and I'm going to have a few comments, and then Bob will offer up some of the details on the weatherization rebate program that's been in existence now since 2008 with the original appropriation of around $300 million, and another $60 million was added for bringing it to a total of $360 million. $200 million was established in the weatherization side and $160 million on the rebate side. And the only real differentiation was at 100% of median income or below, if people fell into the weatherization category, and above that, we reinstated an old rebate program that had been on that HFC had administered many years ago. I would like to say that the program, in my opinion, and I think many share it, has been a resounding success. And I want to thank legislators for the opportunity that we were given and the compliments that we received subsequent to the original appropriation and how quickly we got things ramped up. I want to thank the people of the state that are involved in the program for their ability to gather themselves, form their companies, get issues going. There are just some outstanding people out there that saw a need, but also saw something that fit into their bailiwick, if you will, of expertise and work that they love to do. And we went from a handful of raters to well over 100. We've done thousands and thousands of homes from Barrow to Ketchikan. And we have thousands and thousands of people on the waiting list. I was in Barrow yesterday and Wednesday and Thursday and went up on issues involving a testimony in front of their planning commission on gas pipeline issues. This program came up, and the people that administer the program in Barrow came forward and just said how helpful it's been for their whole community, and that's all the villages across the slope. And especially they highlighted the elders, that it's what it's done to lower costs. And so everywhere we go, the program is met with outstanding support. Now, we owe thanks to several. Now, you know, we had $25 million that was appropriated by the governor into the bill, and the Senate, even though the bill hasn't been passed over, had put another $26.1 in. Then there was concern and anticipation, if you will, or discussions of how much more do we need to have in there to keep it at its current level, and those were discussions taking place on the House side. So I can't thank people enough for recognizing that the program is a success and wanting to contribute. That's a much more enjoyable position to be in than being at a microphone, having people pounding on you because something doesn't work. I really love this program and what it's accomplished and what it does and the thanks that you get from people. Average savings now, we're up around over $1,600 per annum savings and reductions at 30% of energy usage, just like getting another permanent fund check. And that's the quality of the home has been improved. the quality of life has been improved because of the life expectancy of the home and all those things associated with it through better insulation and better heating systems. It's just a win-win all the way down the line. And we're hoping that issues can be resolved. This program, in my estimation, is one of the best things I've ever been involved with for absolutely meeting and surpassing the goals that were established and setting forth. I believe in all sorts of energy. You folks know I'm working on the gas line, but there's hydro issues out there. There's wind. There's all kinds of energy, all of them good. All of them have their appropriate place and best use. I will say this, in my opinion, I don't care where you get your energy from. We need to use less of it, no matter where it comes from, because we're in a high-cost state, and we should embrace programs that help accomplish that, because it just we're in discussions now on billions of dollars on various different projects, and at the interim, I believe we should be supporting these programs to their utmost because it's the most direct benefit to the citizens of this state with minimal amount of work. This is not, it's technical work, but the experts that do it are very good at it, but it's not over-consuming. It's not so technical that people can't. We have many people do their own work, and then it's rated by others and experts that come in to analyze it. So it's really a well-structured, well-intended, and is accomplishing its stated goal. And with that, I'd like Bob to maybe give the committee some of the more details of the program.
Including how many Alaskans are involved, how many are on the wait list.
How many are on the list now at certain funding levels, what we anticipate, how long it will take on that waiting list, and how many we can dispatch on a weekly basis. So Bob, if you would, please.
Mr. Brain.
Thank you, Dan. Mr. Chairman,
get the microphone.
Can you hear me now? Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bob Breen, and thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today a little bit about the program. I'm the Director of Research and Rural Development, as Dan mentioned, and the mission of our HFC is to provide affordable housing for Alaskans across the state. To that end, our program attempts to do our part in that overriding mission statement of the corporation. As Dan mentioned earlier, in 2008-2009, the legislature did authorize $360 million to be spent on weatherization and energy, home energy rebates. As oil prices have risen above $100 a barrel when Alaskan communities were affected by the high cost of home heating, much like we are today, the legislature then demonstrated a vision in funding these programs, and it's resulted in us providing energy efficiency improvements to over 17,000 homes in the state of Alaska. That number is through January of 2011, over 17,000 homes. We ramped those two programs up in the spring of 2008. I think we went from a $4.8 million program to a $360 million program. And we, to say the least, we did hit the ground running. We put a lot of effort into ramping up and creating partnerships with other agencies around the state of Alaska so that we could achieve that. For example, in the weatherization program, we previously had five contractors that worked statewide for about $5 million. We brought on all of the regional housing authorities as additional contractors, so we went from 5 to 20 contractors that cover the state in its entirety. So that's just an example of the kind of ramping up that we did between the end of legislative session and the implementation of that budget on June 1st of 2008. It was a challenge, but it was very gratifying work to put it together, get it out on the street, and start doing home energy improvements for families in the state of Alaska. We have reached our capacity at this point, and we're operating approximately in 100 communities across the state of Alaska. We plan to do 4,000 homes this year in the weatherization arena, and those upgrades range from about $11,000 in the rural areas, in the more urban areas, to about $30,000 per home in the more remote areas of the state. Again, we plan on doing 4,000 homes. We do allow for averaging to be done by our contractors. So potentially our target is 4,000. Potentially we could be 4,300, depending upon what the averaging results show us after the work is done. The second audience addressing the higher address the higher income homeowners who make 101% more of federal poverty level. As Dan mentioned, this was an attempt to kind of reach the whole spectrum of citizens in our state. Weatherization, more the lower income, home energy rebate, the higher income, but also realizing that there's opportunities throughout that spectrum to do energy efficiency improvements. In the home energy rebate program, we calculated that the maximum rebate that could be issued would be about $10,000. In addition to the 17,000 homes that we have made more efficient state, energy efficient statewide, there is another 3,500 households hoping to participate in the rebate program. So they're actually in the pipeline, have applied, and are waiting for a dispatch. We have an 18-month clock on that dispatch. Once a homeowner gets their address and name dispatched, they have 18 months to do the improvements. We do a post-assessment on the home, and we calculate the rebate to that homeowner accordingly. We have a very sophisticated software that we use on all of the homes, not only in the rebate program, but in the weatherization program as well, so that we can measure energy savings. We had a lengthy discussion about whether or not to look at dollar savings versus energy savings at one time when we were developing the software, and we realized quickly there's no way that we could anticipate what the going rate or the current cost of energy would be on any given day. So our target was to look at energy savings in particular. And then whatever the cost of energy is on that given day, it makes it fairly easy to calculate what the savings might be. So we targeted energy savings rather than energy cost. Currently, we have, as I mentioned, 3,500 people in the pipeline for the home energy rebate program. Because the wait list continues to grow and the funds are obligated, any future funding at this point is not secure. We're dispatching about 40 names per week right now. We're not sure how this will affect the total program participation, but we will continue to monitor activity and report on this to the legislature. I think it's fair to say we could speed up or slow down the dispatches of names, but if we're looking at 3,500 in the system, all of our money is obligated. The only new money that we have to roll back out is if someone drops off and doesn't participate. So we've basically slowed the list down to 40 names per week, and that's kind of where we're at this point with regard to dispatch. In terms of actual savings achieved through the rebate program, our data tells us we're averaging close to 1,600, between $1,550 and $1,600 dollars per year per home. And this is money that would otherwise be spent on in-home heating and is now circulating throughout the local and regional economies. As Dan mentioned earlier, and as he's said this before, it's like receiving an additional permanent fund dividend. It frees up disposable income for other goods and services, which people purchase locally or regionally, and that circulates through the economy a multiple of anywhere from 3 to 5 additional times. So it's very significant in terms of the savings that it represents to Alaskan families. While I mentioned that the average rebate paid out is a little over $6,000, in fact, the average homeowner is spending almost $11,000 on their own home repairs, knowing that once they get into the mechanical process of doing improvements to the home, they are willing to make a commitment of additional money on their own part because they recognize the value of energy savings. So average is $6,000. The average that they're putting into the home is over $10,000. They're realizing that the savings of $1,500 or more per year, it doesn't take very long to get a return on investment. you know, at a close to 30%, it's hard to find that kind of return anywhere.
I mean, I think our average payback's running about 3 years to recoup the costs going in, which is a good return on investment.
Representative Fairclough has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, I should just disclose, as I always do, that I was a recipient of the energy rebate that I waited my appropriate months and then some to have my first energy rating, and I spent over $13,000 in home energy improvements, and I'm happy to have a five-star home now. So I really appreciate the opportunity. It's a great value for Alaskans in the program. You've spoken to the advantages and the number of Alaskans that are accessing the weatherization program, but really what brings us to this point in this particular conversation is a proposal in the Senate to link the project. And I really am trying not to be inflammatory, but just to understand what that means to the weatherization program when it's tied to all of the other projects. And I certainly don't want to put you on a pinhead and ask you to dance, but would you prefer your program to be outside of this particular mousetrap, or do you feel like you're adding value to the mousetrap by leaving such important programs for Alaskans in one grouping versus an individual item to stand before the governor and before the other body?
If I may, through the chair, Representative Faircloth, I don't feel on the spot, but I appreciate you saying that. If it was up to me, I'd put $1 billion in this program. I'd create an endowment, and I'd make this one of the top priorities in the state. When we look at what we're doing and all the other issues that we're dealing with energy, this is the one that's going, not that the others aren't worthwhile, they're all good. This is the one that's absolutely having immediate results at the least most invasive way. And it's, if you gather the raters, if you gather, go out here and talk to the vendors, the stores, the sales that are going on and the products that are being purchased, those dollars are rolling through the economy over and over again. And at the end of the day, you're seeing an actual cash savings and an energy savings. It's accomplishing those things. If we were to stop the program now, I'd be disappointed, not because I didn't get my way on here, but as an Alaskan, I would feel that we're really missing the boat on an opportunity to continue to affect our citizens. We would last, on a current scenario, I think we'd make it out to about, I believe, April, if all things stopped now, and we'd adjust the rating, you know, and let people know that this thing was winding down. But we could continue out under our current load out to about April of next year. Am I correct on that, Bob? I believe I am. And that would be unfortunate, in my opinion. Under the current funding scenario, it has taken us up. If the bills were to go through, we would be good for another year. And I know you have greater statistics, right, as to the number that we could dispatch per week. It'd be a slower pace. I know at one time we presented numbers. What's a $50 million program look like? What's a $100 million, $200 million? And we have those here. So I want to see this funded only because it's accomplishing so much. Now, I certainly am cognizant and aware and understand the debate that's going on, but I hope that there's a way that this can be resolved, and I think it would be very detrimental to have this program go away because there's nothing out there to replace it, and oil continues to go up in price, and we continue to hold hearings. I have a report due to you folks on July 1st dealing with this very bigger issue of energy supply. So I just hope it can continue. I think it must continue.
Mr. Chairman, just a brief follow-up. And just as an individual homeowner, I certainly have experienced at least a $1,200 annual savings in the investment that I made. But I made those investments up front so that it went into the economy and it did turn before I got that rebate back after I was held accountable for the improvements that I made. So I'm just concerned with that being included in this particular package and at risk in a group versus a standalone that I think it flies very high and has great merit for all Alaskans. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Your duties is running the gas line project, and
and these energy projects, I'd be remiss if my realtor friends didn't hear me say, I don't forget the non-conforming loans. So,
Mr. Chairman?
We have a question from Juneau?
Yes, this is Representative Gettenberg.
Okay, right after Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Questions, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Paskey, I agree with everything you said. You know, the energy future in the state is both to diversify our energy base and to save energy, and I applaud the job you've done. And I guess I'd be remiss without giving some kudos to Senator Hoffman for his work in starting this. You said that there's a certain amount of money you feel you would need to keep it going at the current rate that it's going. Mm-hmm. Could you give us what that amount of money is? The governor proposed some money. The Senate added some. What's the amount that you would need to keep it going at its current rate?
To the chair, Representative Guerra, we had submitted about $100 million would keep us dispatching at the current level that we're doing, maybe up a little bit, and that would take us out another year.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And just so we can try and help find a way out of the stalemate we're at in special session, I would also be remiss if I didn't mention that Senator Stedman has said publicly that he's willing to take this program and the renewable energy program out of the contingency language so it doesn't get vetoed. A lot more work has to be done. But
if we agree to keeping the contingency language on. So, Representative Guerra.
It's my original point, which is all three parties, if we don't start sitting down now, are never going to get out of the special session. And I hope that the governor and the Senate and the House can sit down and work this out. And then I think the contingency language disappears. And then I guess on a personal note, I will say, like Representative Fairclough, I've used the program. I've saved a lot of money on energy, but that's because my house is a lot colder now. I was going to do something about that. We didn't get a big enough heater. I appreciate it.
Well, sir, if I may, to the chair, Representative Guerra, I'm glad you used the program. Those are great testimonials, and it just helps us, makes this testimony easier because you have people that have actually used it. I know my wife gets frustrated me every place I go. I'll talk to people and on airplanes or whatnot. I always ask people if they own a house in my next door, do you use the program? As many people have said, yeah, or people say, well, I'm thinking about it, so I'm always encouraging. So I'm glad you used the program. I'm glad it worked for you.
Okay. Representative Guttenberg and anybody else that's in the, wants to testify from Juneau from the House Finance Committee, let me know so I can get me in the queue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is Representative Guttenberg, and I too admit that I have used the program in my 30-year-old home now is a 5-star rated home, and I think it's a great program. My concern is, if I heard correctly, that you're doing 40 ratings a week now. And my concern is about the viability of the raters, the economic aspect of having enough raters. I know the program obviously has been through some peaks and valleys of the amount of work being done. Could you address that issue? Do you have the number of raters that are actually working in this field now going down, that it only takes 40 a week to sustain that?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, that is correct, and your concern is very valid. You know, when you go into these programs, nothing in life is guaranteed, but you hope that by creating a successful one that then there's the sentiment to keep it going. Raters are not our employees, they're contractors, and like all people, if what they're currently doing goes away, you hope and pray that they'll figure out something else to go do and they'll stay busy within the industry or their area of expertise. We have had raters calling us and they're concerned. They need to gear up for the next year. They understand that they're anxious for funding. But that there would be a downturn in people that are willing. I mean, if there's no money for them to do what it is that they do, they're going to have to seek employment or work in another capacity. So they're currently, correct me please, but I think we have 126 active raters, maybe down to 98. And I think with the continued funding that number will stay current. It would even go up if they knew that there was an amount of money where people could make a good living at it and stay busy. So I hope I've answered your question, Representative Guttenberg. But yes, at the current level, I think we can anticipate a downturn in the amount of raters that will stand it because there simply won't be enough to keep them up and active at the numbers we already have working.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is anybody else in Juneau on the Finance Committee that wish to ask any questions?
Looks like we're fine right here now.
Thanks, Representative Guttenberg. Anybody here in Juneau? I mean, here in Anchorage? I'm glad to be today. Any closing comments, Mr. Breen?
Or has a couple items you'd like to leave with the committee.
Sure.
Mr. Chairman, just some factual information I'd like to leave with the committee. If there was no appropriation, we have approximately 3,500 people in the home energy rebate system that we would process through, and then we would wind it down. On the weatherization side, our plan is to do 4,000 units that are in the pipeline, and then we would start to ramp down our activities after this construction season. Currently, as Dan pointed out, there was $25 million in the governor's budget, another 26 by the Senate, which brings it up to about 50-some. That would be about half capacity. As Dan mentioned, it would take us through April of 2012. We would do about 2,000 units on the weatherization side and a half capacity on the rebate side. And to reiterate what Dan said earlier, we have numbers and have spreadsheets on where those dollars would be spent region-wide. Our current capacity is running at about $100 million per year. And if we wanted to maintain that capacity without any ramp down, demobilizing, we're looking at $100 million figure. So those are the three points of reference.
We do have a question from Representative Jewell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the information that you're leaving with us on this. And I, too, hope that we could continue to see the program go on into the future. I do know that there's some parts of the state that are taking this to the private level and looking for private, public, if you will, partnerships, as well as involving younger people on a community service kind of level. So, you know, whether it's Nana Corporation or Bering Straits, looking to partner with AHFC and have some match money so that they can get younger students, high school students, to work with some of the elders and community members as they upgrade their homes. Could you tell us a little bit about that and whether or not that could work within your system?
Through the chair, Representative Jewell, absolutely. One of the elements that we have in the Home Energy Weatherization Program is what we call a training and technical assistance component, which is an allowable component in their budget. And that allows for doing the kind of community training, technical assistance of new workers. Also, our weatherization contractors have a great track record of training local people to do the work. Maybe bring in a lead carpenter or a home builder, but typically they're getting youth from the local community to train them in the trades skills. And in many cases, a lot of those young people are going on to get into the trades. So it works very well. Another program that's out there is one that's called EnergyWise that RuralCap has been doing. I know that they work with NANA in your region, Representative Jewell. We work with them and provide grant funds for education, training, technical assistance, and that's right up our alley. That's exactly what we like to do, we prefer to do, create local capacity and empower locally so that they can do the work locally and retain as much money as possible in their local economy.
Representative Jewell.
Thank you. And what's the commitment of the private sector in the EnergyWise in terms of what have they committed to in those private dollars?
Well, statewide, I think your region, Representative Jewell, is much more active in that regard than others, but you know, our list of partners is quite long. In particular, Dan talked about how these two programs have been a real positive input to industry, in all aspects of industry, from sales to builders to designers in the local areas. And they're always willing to help underwrite activities that we embark upon. And they are also willing to sponsor various kinds of trainings around the state. So But I have to say I'm aware of the kind of commitment that the private sector has done in your region, and you're probably leading edge in that regard. But we do have a great list of partners that we work with around the rest of the state.
Mr. Chair, if I may, just one closing thought. Neither one of us mentioned. We currently believe, and we know it's, and ICER is doing some work for us, but we think, we know fairly, with a great deal of certainty, that a minimum of 2,500 jobs have been created. We think it's closer to 4,000 people are working currently in this industry statewide, and that's a substantial number of
created or retained.
Created or retained, yeah. That's a substantial amount of people.
That was my question. I think we should also be applauded for the sort of new high level of green jobs that you've created throughout the state, and I do support the continuance of the program, and I hope we're able to put it in the budget. That's my preference.
Thank you. I share your belief.
Mr. Chairman.
Do we have a question from Juneau?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. It's Mike Dugan.
Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I couldn't help but notice that on the top of the page that's got the weatherization stuff, there's also $5.5 million for the Gasoline Development Corporation. And I thought maybe if it would be appropriate that Mr. Fauske could give me a couple of sentences about what he's going to use that money for.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. That's actually, we should have had that on our list of questions, and it's my oversight. Thank you, Representative Dugan. Representative Fauske.
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, the $5.5 million would go for the ongoing engineering and the EIS. It's part of an overall group of funds that we had requested.
You pull the microphone.
I'm sorry. $5.5 million had been placed in the capital budget by the governor with a kind of an understanding that there'd be debate during the legislative session and that there would probably be interest in more money coming forward. We had then asked for, I don't want to get too far afield, but it would go for the ongoing work, the environmental impact statement, the summer field work. We had, if I may, Representative Dugan, put in a request for, we had $1 million that lapsed in the original fiscal note because of the section that was a bill when we were told that it couldn't roll over. So we had a request for that $1 million to be reappropriated by the legislature, and then we had a $6.2 million request in on the supplemental, and then we had asked for, and after, as we had gotten into this process, farther down the field or trail, knowing what we were up against, another $15.5 million would have been added to or requested in the capital budget to bring the grand total to $28.2 million, which includes the $5.5 million. The only numbers active, I believe, right now, maybe that's the wrong term, but the $5.5 million that the governor had in, and I'm not sure where it was at with the other requests going in through the supplemental and changes that have been made.
Mr. Chairman.
Do you want more detail, Representative, on what they actually the $5.5 would go for?
Mr. Chairman, if I might. Dan, I don't think we understood anything at all about those numbers that you just told us. So if you could sort of break it down in terms of what you're already expecting to get that's already been appropriated and what's still on the table, I think that would help some of us. Thank you.
And we don't need to get into why it's in this section of the budget. People can make their own inferences.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not trying to make any trouble here. I'm just trying to know what the numbers are. Thank you.
Oh, I'm glad you brought this up, but I just that's the issue. Why I almost can't.
Representative Dugan, Joe Dubler, who is with Alaska Housing but is also vice president for AGDC, is joining me, and we'll give you a breakdown. If I may, the $6.2 million request that I just referred to was new information that we had learned that if we wanted to continue the summer field work, we had originally thought we could get it in the supplemental in March so that we could get into letting out the contracts for the firms to continue doing their work along the route, and rather than wait for a July 1st date, because we know that it then becomes difficult to do. Firms are either tied up, you've missed the season, and so we were trying to expedite that process. If I were, I'd like to turn it over to Joe right now to go through the actual numbers. How that money broke down.
Mr. Dubler. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Joe Dubler. I'm the in this context, I'm the Vice President and Chief Financial Officer of the Alaska Gasoline Development Corporation. The $5.5 million request in the governor's budget included amounts that would be for the commercial and financial analysis, in other words, determining the feasibility of this project in an ongoing project, and RSAs with other state agencies of about $1.4 million. Those would be with DNR and I believe DEC for permitting and EIS, environmental impact statement work, and about $2.2 million for personnel and operating. The remainder, as Dan pointed out, is $7.2 million would be, which was to be in the supplemental, would be engineering, which there's a whole list of issues I can go through one by one if you like, and then environmental and regulatory as well. And that would make up the 7.2. The $15.5 million additional budget amendment that Dan spoke to earlier would also be for engineering and environmental and regulatory. So just continuing the field work through fiscal year 2012.
Why don't you get a summary of that and just put it in written form for our committee?
Mr. Chair, a question? Mr. Chair?
Is that Representative Guttenberg?
Yes, it is. On the same issue, could you address why it's listed as HD 12 through 35 instead of 1 through 40 or another designate statewide? I understand if it was just agency work or things like that, but you're doing field work.
I'm not sure I understand the question, Representative Guttenberg.
In the bill on the CS on page 110, where it's listed Gas Line Development Corporation, year two in-state gas line project, and then in parentheses it says HD 12 through 35. That's usually a designation of where the work is being done. So that designates a certain area of the state as compared with a statewide project. I'm just wondering why that is the way that is.
Representative Guttenberg, Representative Fairclough, that's our staff issue, not a request from the agency. I have James behind me telling me that we are the ones who designated those districts, and we can change that if that's necessary.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I have a follow-up.
Not in our position, other staff. It's not a House bill.
I'd like to thank the representative. I was riding on avoid the deer in the headlight look at the mic. I had no clue. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other questions here? Representative George, you have a phone. Well, I want to thank you, both Mr. Dubler and Mr. Fauci.
Chair?
Was there a question in Juneau still?
Yes, this is Representative Wilson. I have a follow-up to the question, please.
Okay. Representative Wilson.
I'm just curious with this project, if the intent language stays in and it goes to court, what does this do to the overall project if we have to wait 4 years for a court decision?
The Chair, Representative Wilson, it would, without funding, of course, you'd have to shut everything down. It would, we'd continue and complete what work we could, and certainly wouldn't take on any more without a funding source.
I'm sorry. Did you hear me okay?
I heard parts of it, but I guess the question is not just this funding, would it not allow additional funding in other years while we're waiting to see what happens? I'm wanting to find out how much this could stall this project.
Through the Chair, Representative Wilson, what you end up, you've got ongoing work with some time frames attached to it as to the permitting process and the amount of time you have to get those programs done. So it would have an absolutely adverse effect in terms of going forward.
Not good. Is your
answer? It's kind of a not good scenario. If the desire is to continue moving forward and getting the report, we still have a report to the legislature by July 1, but it would not, it would be a complete report, but it would just some of the work would be lacking going forward. So that would be the situation. And 4 years would certainly represent an adverse impact if you were accurate that it would be in the courts for that amount of time.
I'm following.
Any other questions?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Representative Wilson.
So we're not just talking about 1 year. It could possibly put this off even a couple of years as we try to find out exactly what this all means. Is that true?
I'm not a lawyer. I would assume, through the Chair, Representative Wilson, certainly if depending on if there were injunctions filed or whatever the avenue taken, but if the funding's denied, you certainly aren't out contracting and doing work. And the vast majority of this is contract work, not so much administrative on the staff that have been employed, and permitting dollars and paying to have that done.
Thank you.
Any other questions in Juneau as we're wrapping up here?
No, there's not. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for mediating there, moderating. And, so with that, I want to thank you from where we were. I remember in August or July and August of 2008, you were describing this energy weatherization, the red rebate, as being asked to take a sip out of a water hose. You've managed to regulate that flow a little bit and spread it evenly with Alaska over the last 3 years. So I hope we can continue this work without a hiccup if we can get through all this process. So that appreciation of all the members here, I haven't taken advantage of it, and I probably should. Kind of shy about state programs myself, but that's more of a philosophical, but no, that's my personal issue. But with that, we will stand in recess until 1:30 when we continue our next portion with Attorney General Burns at 1:30.
Muted.